Hey, I'm Laura from Berkeley.
I'm Travis Pope from Kirksville, Missouri.
I'm Zach from Chicago, Illinois.
The Sound of Young America is produced independently
and supported by listeners like you and me.
You should support the show like I did. Just visit MaximumFun.org/donate.
I'm Jesse Thorne, live on tape from my house in Los Angeles. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International. It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest, John Darnielle, is both a member of and pretty much all of the band The Mountain Goats. For 20 years now, he's been writing and recording intimate songs that are intimate in unusual ways for a singer-songwriter, often written in the third person, often taking the form as much of a short story as of a confessional. His dozens of albums have earned him a rabid following. His latest record is called All Eternals Deck. Let's hear a little bit of a song from that album. This is For Charles Bronson.
Catch a lucky break. Try to make it last. Rig a blanket curtain up between the present and the past. Play my lucky numbers for most of what they're worth. Lie about my age right down to my last day on this earth. Set your sights on good fortune. Concentrate. Pull back the hammer. Try to hold the gun straight. Hit the gym each night. Stay cool and seldom speak. Keep the heart of a champion. Never let them see you're weak. And whatever they say, page three mention. Focus on the parts that make you feel good. Be grateful for the attention. Set your sights on good fortune. Concentrate.
John Darnielle, welcome to The Sound of Young America.
Hey, thank you so much.
So I know that you're from Southern California, and I know that you lived the first few years of your life in San Luis Obispo, but I don't know where in Southern California you spent your childhood exactly.
A little town called Claremont for the most part. The journey was from San Luis Obispo, then for about a year or two in Milpitas, which is a little town that not a lot of people outside of the San Jose area have ever heard of, and then we moved to Claremont, and I stayed there from the time I was 8 until I was... I don't even know. I left it when I was 18 to go to Portland, but I came back. So Claremont, not the Claremont that's next to San Diego, but the Claremont that's inland from L.A.
This is the Claremont that is the namesake of the Claremont colleges?
Yes, I attended one of them.
How did you start writing songs yourself?
The simple answer is that, because the one that relates to the Mountain Goats is like I was writing poems and I started setting some to music. I mean, of course, like everybody else in high school, I tried to write songs, but they were just appalling, right? It's like I was just writing lyrics that went with the bands I was playing with, went to, I would set to their music. But then my first band started writing. We had a process where my first real band where we were recording stuff. We had a process where my friend Mark would give me a title and then I would write down lyrics. And I played bass in this band. And then I would write a bass line, and he would play percussion, and we'd hit play, and we would usually keep the first take. Like I would be making up the melody on the fly. But when I started writing actual songs that I would call songs, as opposed to those which are sort of a formal experiment kind of deal, that was when I was living in Norwalk, and I was writing poetry, and I thought some of it seemed sort of more appropriate to something a little more direct than the kind of rarefied atmosphere of the poetry reading, you know? So I started setting them to really simple chord progressions and really enjoyed doing that because it's the only, to me, the way where poetry exists is in the air, not on the page. It's like you have to hear it. And so I came around to the idea that a song was actually a discrete construction, not a poem set to music, but its own thing, and started working on those.
Here's a song from my guest John Darnielle's first Mountain Goats album, recorded in 1991. It's called Going to Alaska.
The jacaranda, wet with color, and the heat is a great paintbrush, lending color to our lives, to the air, and to our faces. But I'm going to Alaska, where there's snow to suck the sound out from the air.
That song was a poem first. I was writing poems, and I had that poem, and I thought, well, the language in this is pretty decent. This is a nice piece of writing. And then I had this new guitar, and I had a slide, a Hawaiian finger covering slide, and I tuned the guitar to a chord and worked on it, and I thought, well, you know, kind of, that sounds pretty cool, you know, and you can hear the rhythms, the speech rhythms, in a way that you can't look at it on the page. So, I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sure the performance is kind of rough. I haven't listened to that in a long time, but I do know all the words, and I think they're all right. You know?
It seems rare to me in the world of singer-songwriters and just people who think of themselves primarily as songwriters to not be one of two things. One is to be intensely personal in the confessional sense, and the other is to be emotionally powerful, but, you know, generic in terms of specificities, you know, like, the way that maybe like, a Bruno Mars song is very deeply felt, but is about just sort of the idea of love or something like that, rather than something that feels very specific.
Right.
And it strikes me as unusual that many of your songs do not feel confessional, but they feel extremely specific.
Hmm.
I wonder if starting your songwriting career, writing based on titles that someone else suggested, led you down a path of not writing confessional song. And I wonder if when you were performing in coffee shops, you felt a pressure to, you know, write coffee shop songs.
Well, I didn't really do a lot of time doing coffee shops. And the thing is, one reason I think that I came to working with an acoustic guitar late is I grew up in California, and I really had an allergy to confessional singer-songwriter stuff, because when I was growing up, every other dude had an acoustic guitar, and when they weren't doing covers of, I don't know, songs off of Dark Side of the Moon, they'd be playing stuff that was very confessional, and I liked Nick Cave and the Sisters of Mercy and Lou Reed, and I really did not want to be a confessional songwriter. That's a big part of the reason why I'm the Mountain Goats and not John Darnielle, right? It's like to go out there with an acoustic guitar under your own name is to sort of say, care about my feelings because I'm just sitting here telling you about them, right? And it's like, to me, that's not – I only want people to care about good stuff I make if it's good. I don't want them to really care about me personally at all, right, unless the story I have to tell is compelling.
I think that the confessional singer-songwriter writes a song because he or she has something burning inside of them that they have to get out. And the kind of externalist pop hitmaker singer-songwriter writes a song because they want to move people in some way.
So I want to say that I don't think that's true at all before we go any further with that.
Sure.
That I don't agree with that. But continue.
Let's hold off on the other stuff that I was going to talk about. So what do you think motivates songwriters in those modes to write? And the question that I was getting at is what motivates you to write, whether it's those things or something else?
So I think I would not be comfortable characterizing any writing pursuit as obedient to any particular impetus, right? That I would say many confessional songwriters are writing out of formal curiosity or out of boredom, you know, or out of nervous habit, you know. I don't think – I think that the line that confessionalism would like to sell you, right, I had a feeling and I had to share it, so here it is, right? Well, we know this is untrue because what does my – if I'm sad, what does my feeling actually sound like? Does it come in rhyming couplets? No. It does not, right? It comes in the form of a cry, a wordless cry, right?
Has some melody, but it's not very compelling.
Sure. It doesn't have a structure, right? It doesn't have, you know, all your feelings are grunts and groans and cries and wails and moans, right? They're not words. If you put it in words, right, you're already really roping it in and framing it, you know? And so a confessional songwriter might think that, but they're not. If they're directly expressing their feelings, they're not writing songs. When you're writing songs, you are doing something else. You know, maybe you're talking to yourself about your feelings, but I don't think it's actually self-expression any more than the writer of, you know, than ABBA, right? Who writes some of the most emotional songs you'll ever hear, right? I mean, the strings on Dancing Queen, you know, you listen to that, just the chord changes, right? Accomplish so much emotionally, and people would say, oh, well, that's not a direct expression of feeling, but I say, yes, it is. Feeling gets expressed in all kinds of ways, right? And so I think the confessional songwriter kind of has a little parlor trick he does to convince you that his pursuit is less formal than anybody else's, but it's not, right? It's all formalism to some extent or another until you get into like free jazz, you know, or noise or something like that. The reason I say part of that is, yes, what motivates me. And it's kind of idle curiosity. It's sort of like I will have a feeling and it feels like, well, this is a sort of this mood, this urge to write, you know, not to get anything out. You know, I don't – when I'm feeling sad, I just indulge the feeling or I listen to other people's music. When I'm writing music, it's more – it is a state of curiosity of like what is this – it's its own state of feeling, the desire to write, right? And then you start to write and you see where it's going. And it's very much like building sandcastles or something or making a finger painting. You know, it's like you start to divine the shape, right? And you say, oh, it's taking this sort of shape, only it has more of an emotional tone than a sandcastle, right? It's like, oh, it's going in this sad direction, but let me take what I know about sadness and put that in there. You know, it's more automatic than that, but it's less it's not, you know, just the cry of a suffering person. Hardly anybody in my experience ever writes directly from their suffering. You write about it afterwards, later, you know. And the same is true with joy or whatever else you're writing about, that you are recollecting it in tranquility, in Wordsworth's phrase.
Do you have to do something? First of all, congratulations on that Wordsworth illusion. You've earned your public radio merit badge.
I'd like to give credit to my professor, Robert Mezzi, without whom I would be unable to quote Wordsworth.
So do you have to do something to get to the place where you can find that, as you described it, automatic process of creating and refining a song?
No. I mean, I think like all really young writers, you try and sort of come up with tricks that will do it. You know, you hear Theodore Rethke used to get ready for his poetry readings by doing calisthenics and stuff like that. I love this image. But for me, I mean, it's one thing I need to usually do is be distracted. You know, I think you can always hear when somebody was trying to write a song. And the whole deal with what I do is that it's supposed to sound natural and automatic, like you are hearing me, you know, it's like, or me with quotes around me, right? I want it to feel very direct. I want it to feel like, you know, at some point a hand is going to reach out from the speaker and touch you on the chest, right? And so to do that, I usually need to be distracted. A lot of my early tapes were written literally while watching television. I was actually just listening to a tape from 2001 this morning, and I narrate what's going on the muted TV while I record. I said there's a cub on base, and Joe Girardi is – or no. No, the Cubs were up, and it was like the bottom of the 13th in 2001, and Girardi was up, and I narrate all this, and then I go into the song. And it's like – so I don't remember writing that song, but I do know what happened. I was sitting there watching a Cubs game, and I had a guitar in my hand. And my conscious mind is distracted enough that ideas are bubbling up from somewhere, right? And for me, that's kind of vital, that it's like what I'm accessing needs to be a little underneath the too intentional sort of place. You know, I think my images anyway are at their best when I'm not working hard on them but letting them bubble up. And the way I do that is by keeping myself distracted.
I want to play a song you recorded a few years ago called The Best Ever Death Metal Band in Denton.
The best ever death metal band out of Denton was a couple of guys who'd been friends since grade school. One was named Cyrus, the other was Jeff, and they practiced twice a week in Jeff's bedroom. The best ever death metal band out of Denton never settled on a name, but the top three contenders after weeks of debate were Satan's Fingers and the Killers and the Hospital Bombers.
This is a song that came up with a lot of folks when I was talking to them about your oeuvre. Pardon my use of oeuvre.
Oh, I condone your use of oeuvre.
Okay, thank you. I didn't give it the flair that you gave it just now.
And I should also like to apologize because I believe it's oeuvre. My French is the worst. There's no language that I speak with less grace than French.
This is a really charming song about a type of music where the adjective charming doesn't seem like it would be the one that you would pick.
Well,
what I wonder is, I know from reading your blog that you're a fan of such a broad variety of styles of music, and I wonder what you get from different kinds of music, and whether you get something different from listening to death metal than you do from listening to, you know, classical guitar or something like that.
It is something different. It is something different. I was thinking about that this morning. I was listening to King Diamond, and I don't have the sort of direct experience of feeling that I get listening to Prokofiev or something, where you're sort of taking this music and asking yourself, what is the emotion? You know, with a lot of the metal I listen to, it's kind of like immersing oneself in a science fiction novel, right, or a fantasy novel. And a lot, it's no accident that so many old metal covers are, you know, are images by Michael Whalen or the Brothers Hildebrandt, you know, these fantasy artists. It's sort of a way of closing your eyes and journeying to distant realms, you know. And then black metal sort of really, and death metal, take that a step further and ask you to really imagine a place, especially in death metal, where, you know, where the intervals are different, where we're not talking in these normal, we're not just playing a loud, fast version of rock and roll. We're doing something quite different in terms of scales and trying to evoke these different moods. All the death metal dudes are like serious shredders, really good musicians, sort of trying to craft this different space. But for me, it remains a kind of a visually motivated thing. There's a lot of visions that you sort of chase after listening to that stuff.
More with John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats after a break. It's The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org and PRI, Public Radio International.
Halls of the Stone Tower in the foothills.
Why should we hide? Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com. If you're interested in joining us at MaximumFun.org as an intern, you can find information on how to apply at MaximumFun.org/internships. We're currently accepting applications for interns for the summer term. If you want more information on how you can become an intern at MaximumFun.org, just visit MaximumFun.org/internships. MaximumFun.org is on the move, and we're headed to you, Midwest. You can catch The Sound of Young America live April 13th at the Second City in Chicago with special guests including Peter Sagal and, I'm not making this up, wrestler/comedian Colt Cabana, as well as musician Robbie Fulks and some great stand-up comics. You can also catch Jordan Jesse Go live in Ann Arbor on April 15th. Some talks from me and Jordan on April 16th, again in Ann Arbor at the Ann Arbor District Library. Then we'll be back in Chicago for a Jordan Jesse Go live show on April 17th at the Second City with special guests, my brother, and me. So I hope we'll see you, Midwest, in Chicago and Ann Arbor from April 13th to 17th. You can find all the information under live shows at our website, MaximumFun.org. It's the Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest, John Darnielle, is the frontman and the sole contiguous member of the band The Mountain Goats. His new record is All Eternals Deck. Let's listen to a little bit of a song from the album. This is called Birth of Serpents.
Like a vision in a crystal ball. Let it all fill with smoke. Is this somebody's idea of a joke? Let the fixer work until the silver's washed away and take the picture from the tray.
John, tell me a little bit about how the way that you have created recordings has shaped your choices as a songwriter and musician. As someone who was very famous or well known for recording, hastily and releasing albums on cassette tape earlier in your career and has worked extensively with a friend of this program, John Vanderslice, makes the most specific recording aesthetic choices you could possibly imagine. Tell me a little bit about the relationship between your songwriting and, singing and performing and musicianship and the medium through which it's heard.
I mean, the thing is, my writing process is essentially unchanged, right? We record differently so we can capture the sound of us playing together, and because I enjoy taking the songs into that environment. But the actual process, I'm kind of more romantic than I care to admit about it. That I'm sitting there, sort of having this in touch with the subconscious or mid-conscious moment when I write. And something comes out, and I no longer write as really quickly as I used to. It used to be I sit down, I'm going to write, it'll be done when I get up, period, right? And then I'd record it before I got up, and then that would be over, and that would be what you'd hear. Now all that happens is I sit down. Most of the time I still finish it in that initial sitting, right? But I record a demo, and I send it to Peter and John, and then later we meet in a studio and do it. But the writing process is essentially unchanged. The issue now is like that the way that when I play demos – I'm usually trying to be a whole band, and so then when we meet to work it out, I learn what my part actually is, because my part is not to be the percussion and the bass and the guitar. It's just the guitar, right?
Prince in like the mid 80s was writing and recording so many songs that he couldn't release them all, despite the fact that he was essentially recording as five different acts.
Like, tell me you're going to play Smog's Prince Alone in the Studio at the end of this bit.
Okay, fine. Absolutely.
you know that song?
I've never heard it before.
Totally incredible song. So.
Okay, well, I promise we will.
Yeah.
So he at one point was creating acts so that he could put out these songs that he was writing. He was Vanity Six and Apollonia and Instrumental, The Family, and
The Time,
Jesse Johnson, and The Time, which he sort of transformed from a pretty legitimate band that wrote its own songs to just Prince playing all the instruments and then having Morris Day come in and retrack the lead vocal.
Yeah, I love the Vanity Six album. It's very strange that you should bring this up, because there's a song that did not make All Eternals Deck called For Denise Matthews, which is Vanity's actual name, and it's a song about her sort of tailspin that she went into toward the end of her pop life.
I wonder how writing so much how you look at this career where you've written and recorded so much, and if you ever imagine yourself as a different kind of artist, one who, you know, slaves over refining 10 songs and tries to put out a perfect 10-song album rather than one who records a second album on cassette tape to release with his CD, which you are doing this time around.
Well, I mean, that's just the demos. But I mean, to me, it's like, no, I am not. For me, music, or rock music anyway, has to have, you know, an immediacy to it. I am not. I'm not a big fan of super Baroque stuff. Even though I listen to a lot of metal and stuff, which is very considered, careful music, but at the same time, it's about immediacy. But it's funny you should mention Prince, because his stuff is very considered and very careful, right? He just is not afraid of working, of staying at work, you know, whereas like there was this weird image that came up somehow during the 70s, I think, of like, you know, of it being asking a lot of a songwriter to write 10 songs in a year, right? It really, I mean, let's imagine the worst case scenario of working 5 8-hour days to get a song, right? Well, then you should still be getting 4 or 5 songs a month, right? So I don't. Prince is very productive, but just by comparison to people who I think are thinking too hard about the business end of, like, you know, you can't exhaust people's attention, you can't, you have to work on a release cycle and put out 12 songs and then work those 12 songs for 14 months and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I've always strongly resisted that. I mean, at some point you sort of have to accept it to a smaller extent, because it really is the case that if you put out 2 records a year, then every time you do an interview, the first, second, third, and fourth question will be like, you release a lot of stuff. Do you release everything you write, and so on and so forth? And it becomes difficult to say, well, no, look, I mean, I'm a writer, so it shouldn't be surprising that I write, you know. But yeah, so I don't – and the way that I usually say this in shorter version is, it's not that I'm that productive, it's that other people are lazy, right? But I really do think that's true, that, you know, if you're a songwriter and you're only writing 12 songs a year – maybe only 12 good ones, okay, but I mean, there's this sort of governing myth of the songwriter that it's asking a lot of the songwriter to write songs. I don't think it is. I think if you are a songwriter, you should pride yourself on being productive.
Have you ever considered combing the country for spectacularly beautiful multi-ethnic women with whom you can place your songs and you can write and record it and then have them re-record the lead vocal?
No, I have a resistance. No, I have not.
Well, John, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on The Sound of Young America.
Sure.
John Darnielle is the front man and sometimes sole member of the Mountain Goats, although he does have a regular group of collaborators these days. His new record with the band is called All Eternals Deck. Per John's request, we're going to close out the segment with this song from Smog called Prince Alone in the Studio.
In the studio, it's 2 a.m. and all the girls are gone. Thought they were going to be able to have sex with him.
That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I have been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our music is provided to us by Dan Wally. Our editor is Nick White. Producer, Julia Smith. Our intern is Lindsay Palmer, and our development director is Teresa Thorne. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, where you can download all of our shows for free. If you have thoughts about the show, you can email me directly, personally, at Jesse@MaximumFun.org. We'll see you next time on The Sound of Young America. Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered online at ask.metafilter.com.